Grab a bowl of your favorite sugary cereal and join us for another episode of Saturday Morning Fever, a proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. I'm your host, Rob Kelly, and joining me on this rocket ship to Mongo is my pal and friend of the network, Corey Drew. Hi, Corey.
Hey, Rob. How's it going?
It's going great. I'm happy to be discussing Flash Gordon with you. We've been talking about doing this for a couple of months, and we've been gorging ourselves on Flash Gordon goodness in the animated style.
So much
Flash Gordon content. And I'm also excited for Saturday Morning Fever to be back. It's a show that we all on the network like doing, and then for some reason we let entire years pass in between episodes, and that's really terrible. But like I said, we're going to be talking about the Filmation Flash Gordon series. We're going to get into the episodes, the history of it, the cast, and then some interesting sort of backstory stuff. There was more backstory to the show than I ever would have imagined. I learned all that preparing for this episode. But before that, we have to thank our sponsor. This episode of Saturday Morning Fever is sponsored in part by InStockTrades.com. InStockTrades is your best online source for trades, hardcovers, and other collected editions, all for up to 45% off with reshipping for orders at $50 or more. Corey, what do you got?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me on, and thank you for giving me an opportunity to do an in-stock trade spot. This is my first one, so I'm excited. I feel like a legitimate member of the network now. I feel very legitimized by this. And of course, given the theme, right, and given Flash Gordon's origins in sequential storytelling, right, I needed to find something that was cool, maybe something that's a little under the radar. And other than the Filmation animated series, and then of course the movie, the motion picture, the Dino De Laurentiis one, my greatest exposure to Flash Gordon was the animated series Defenders of the Earth, because I am that age. I am that guy. I'm a Gen X, dude. And that came out right at the sort of waning years of my sit down and watch cartoons time. And, that was, of course, the adventures of Mandrake, Lothar, Flash Gordon, and the Phantom. Well, in 2016, the Dynamite Jeff Parker sat down to write a comic, six issues of a comic called King's Watch. And King's Watch is, of course, named King's Watch because of the King's Features Syndicate. It's playing words there.
I never realized that's what it was. Okay. I always wondered about it. It's such a strange title. I was like,
right. Like, so it? Yeah. It's named that just as a reference, I think, to that. I mean, Jeff Parker didn't tell me that, but it's some sort of putting two and two together here. He did a spin on the Defenders of the Earth with this comic called King's Watch, which is with the art by Mark Laming, which I hope I'm pronouncing your name right, Mr. Laming. Absolutely beautiful art, a rocking story. I mean, it's I think it's five issues. I misspoke. I said six. They fight a villain, a group of villains called the Cult of the Cobra. Just really just exciting. Harkens back to that sort of Art Deco era swashbucklery thing, but is totally unique, totally its own thing. But a beautifully done homage to these characters. And it's published, I said Dynamite because it is actually published by Dynamite Entertainment.
There you go.
Again, it's from 2016. Normally you would go into any a bookstore and buy this book, the trade of this, for $19.99, but InStock Trades has it for the low price of $13.99, which is a 30% discount, which is pretty fantastic.
Absolutely. Well said. That was your first InStock Trades. You handled it like a pro, man. Well, you got all the essential information out there. I've never read King's Watch, obviously. I don't know why I haven't yet, because I like Jeff Parker. He had a great run on Aquaman.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I like this concept, like Flash Gordon and Mandrake and Phantom. So this is something, I'll add it to the pile of things that, like, I hope someday I'm going to read this. It looks really cool. And of course, perfectly appropriate for what we're going to be discussing today. I, of course, also stuck to Flash Gordon related stuff for my pick. I went with Flash Gordon, the Dan Barry Sundays, Volume 1, Death Planet. The publisher is Titan. This is when Dan Barry was doing the strip. It includes strips from 1967 through 1971. So right around when I was born, that's exciting. The normal price is $49.99. In-stock trades price is $37.49. That's 25% off. And these are those horizontal books.
Love them.
Like IDW did, where, you know, they're printed length horizontal wise because that was the format of the comic strip. And so these are all the Sundays. And I've had a better appreciation for Dan Barry's work on Flash Gordon ever since I've been kind of doing the deep dive on this character. Because, I mean, he had an incredibly long run on the strip, and like 10 times longer than Alex Raymond ever did, even though that's the name everybody kind of associates with him. Sure. So it's 228 pages, full color, an absolutely great deal. So pick up both of these books if you're a Flash Gordon fan like Corey and I are. So for these and all the other trade paperback needs, visit InStockTrades.com, and we thank them for their support. All right. So like I said, we're here to talk about The New Adventures of Flash Gordon, which was a Filmation show. It ran from 1979 to 1982, although that's misleading because if you hear that, you say, wow, they did four seasons of show or three seasons of the show. No, they did two seasons. They were just years apart. This was back when, you know, they just figured, these kids aren't paying attention to this stuff and they'll just take it off the air for a couple of years. And then we'll bring it back. Okay. So it ran for, I think, was it 36 episodes, something like that? Or 20? Well, 30, it's weird.
32, I think, is.
Yeah, I mean.
I think it's two seasons of 16 episodes.
Right. IMDb says 24, and then I've seen other places say 32, 36. And it's part of it is because they got split up, and we'll get into the history of that in a little bit. But, Corey, you told me that these were available. I didn't know that these were available anywhere. I hadn't seen these in 30 years. And then you told me they're on Freevee. They're also on Tubi for completely free. You got to watch commercials, but they're all there for free. So I went on a binge watch on them. So obviously I told the story on the Treasury Cast they did about Flash Gordon, how you helped me with the Flash Gordon pinball machine, that Herculean effort
to lift that
500 pound thing. Yeah, we got it halfway there. I will say we got it ready and we just required these muscle guys to get it home. And so I'm not going to get into all the boring details of the pinball machine. Everybody's tired of me talking about this damn pinball machine. But this show, did you watch it as a kid?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I sure did. Yep. It was, I remember very distinctly it being on CBS, our local CBS affiliate. And it was on, it was the sort of final cartoon that I gave a damn about because it was Batman, like The New Adventures of Batman, and then The New Adventures of Flash Gordon. So it was like a Filmation back to back.
Yep.
And then immediately thereafter was the Looney Tunes. And I loathed Looney Tunes when I was a little kid.
What?
Love them now. Hated them when I was a kid. You know, I think I've told you before. I know I've told you personally. I think I've said it on a podcast on the network somewhere. I had a very distinct rubric for determining what I like to watch. It needed to have lasers or it needed to have wizards. And if it had either of those two things, I was fine. And I love the episodes of Looney Tunes with Marvin the Martian. So, you know, okay. But I didn't find the violence funny. You know, I thought Bugs Bunny was a dick. I wasn't the guy. I was not the target market for those comic cartoons. So I knew that when Flash Gordon came on, that after that was done, then I was going outside, to play, with my knockoff, plastic, like, blow mold Star Wars figures that I had. And it was, you know, I very, very distinctly remember watching whole episodes. I remember feeling, you know, I probably only watched like four in a row, but I, week after week after week, but I felt like I watched all of them. You know what I mean? Because it was like, you would jump in, you know, 3-4 weeks later and it would be a continuation. It was sequential, you know, things were happening and you're like, wait, what was going on here? Or it would, as often was the case, be an episode you've already seen. So you get to dip your toe back in. Yeah, I remember it vividly. It's one of those cartoons that I sort of thought it was like a fever dream for a while because, you know, everything that's ever been put on film coming out on DVD in whole seasons, you know, there was kind of a dead zone there where you couldn't find it unless you stumbled across it as an old VHS tape or something somewhere. But yeah, I thought it was you know, maybe I imagined it and maybe it was something else, but I have very, very distinct memories of it. I enjoyed it a great deal.
Now, to your recollection, was this your introduction to Flash Gordon?
Oh yeah.
Like, oh, okay, so you'd never heard of this character before and you were just watching it as a cartoon show.
No, and I had, you know, so this was 1980, 1981. So I was 6 years old, 7 years old. So I didn't have any kind of frame of reference for what Flash Gordon was. I didn't know there was a difference between Flash Gordon and The Flash on the Super Friends necessarily. You know,
Okay.
I'm not trying to, you know, make myself seem like, you know, I was some sort of, you know, child genius. I didn't know what the hell was going on. So I'm like,
That's the Flash's last name,
yeah,
clearly. Gordon. Everybody
clearly
knows
it's
that. Yeah.
Flash Gordon. Yeah. And I probably had an argument about that on the playground with somebody. But I mean, he wore red and yellow or red and gold, and so did the Flash. And it was, you know, it all made sense in my head. And then I saw the movie,
Ah, there you go. I was
you know,
wondering
the
where the movie's going to
Laurentis
come into
film.
this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there is so much in the movie that pulls so directly from the comic strips, and there is so much in the cartoon that pulls so directly from the comic strips that it all felt like sort of one kind of cinematic universe to me, even though it, you know, was not.
I mean, yeah, that's the thing that made this show so unique. And of course, I watched it at the time as well. I was familiar with Flash Gordon from comic strips and other appearances here and there. You know, the show was certainly my big introduction to him and kind of a, you know, I don't think I'm sure I'd seen the comic strips here and there, but I don't think it was like in my daily paper or anything like that. But what made this unique and what the Filmation crew did, Lou Scheimer and you know Norm Prescott, was that this, and you mentioned this a second ago, is that the first season is sequential. It tells a 24 chapter story. It's got cliffhangers, and that was incredibly unusual for Saturday morning. Obviously, those shows are meant to be, you know, not to say that they're not artistic achievements, because they are all in their own way, but certainly the networks regarded Saturday morning cartoons as almost like, you know, just
Disposable,
yeah, like just like, you know,
fast-paced.
like, yeah, like a, just like a, you know, like a can of beans, you know, just like it's just a product and you put it on and you move it off the shelf, and once you've got like 42 of them, you don't need them anymore and you cancel it, you know what I mean? Like, that was the level of that they were sort of thinking about it. But this show, you had to watch it from week to week, because otherwise you didn't really know what the story was. And imagine asking little kids to have that kind of attention. Now, of course, it's hearkening back to the movie serials, which kids managed to, you know, kids were smarter back then. Kids managed to you know, in between worrying about World War II, they managed to pay attention to the fact, oh, I got to come to the theater every Saturday and watch the Flash Gordon serials, which I also watched on my local UHF station, because they used to run them on Sundays. And I love them. Buster Crabbe is Flash Gordon. They were so full of crazy sets and all the Art Deco design, and Ming the Merciless is great. But that's what made the show so unusual. And every episode opens with like chapter 10, the ba 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 ba, chapter 11. And
That
then,
booming voice.
yeah, oh my God. Yeah. And that's Lou Scheimer, by the way.
Lee
He's
Scheimer, yep.
doing it himself. And then, of course, they take the show off the air. And they bring it back and they retool it, which is always dangerous. And they do a very animation-y thing, which is add a funny animal character. In this
Yeah.
case,
Gremlin,
Gremlin,
yeah.
the pink dragon. And you know, I know on an intellectual level that these are not, yes, they're voice actors, but when I'm looking at the screen are drawings, right? But I swear to God, you can almost see the looks on Flash and Dale's face that they have to deal with this unwanted cast member. Like,
Yeah,
they
well,
just don't want to deal with this guy.
given the amount of rotoscoping they used in that animation, maybe you could see the looks on their face. Maybe they just couldn't animate the eye rolls out.
Yeah, I know. It's just like, okay. But I mean, okay, we don't want to jump immediately to kind of the downside to Flash Gordon. We're talking about the good Flash Gordon. I do want to mention the cast of this show. It's Robert Ridgely played Flash Gordon. He passed away in 1997. He was in a ton of movies: Robin Hood, Men in Tights, Something Wild. He was in Boogie Nights, probably his most famous role. He's the colonel in Boogie Nights. He's that pervert who gets arrested, and he's the one who asks Dirk Diggler, "Can I hear you have a little giant cock? Can I see it?"
Are you kidding me?
That's Robert Ridgely. Yes. That's
him.
Oh my
God. I need to unlearn that.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
Successfully I thought you did that already. Again.
That's him. He was a friend of the families of Paul Thomas Anderson, and he grew up with this guy in his house. And that's why he cast him in his movies. Now, he also had an incredibly long career as a voice actor. And you can imagine with great voice. He played General Ross on The Hulk. He played Tarzan in the Super 7. He was also in Thundar, The Centurions, The Addams Family, a million other cartoon shows. But yeah, he's Flash Gordon. Diane Pershing plays Dale. She's still around. Her other most famous role, probably her most famous role as a voice actor, is she's Poison Ivy in the Justice League animated universe. In every iteration of Batman the Animated Series and the Justice League, she's Poison Ivy. Gotham Girls, that's her. She was also in Prince Valiant. She was She-Ra. She was on She-Ra. And she played Dale Arden on Defenders of the Earth, which I thought, that's a nice callback. Melendry Britt, she plays the incredibly sensual Aura, Princess Aura. She was She-Ra. She was the voice of She-Ra. And she had she's had some live action appearances. She was on Cheers, Weird Science, Gilmore Girls. Alan Oppenheimer plays Ming. He was in movies like Westworld, Phantom 2040, Murphy Brown. He did voices on James Bond Jr. He played Jonathan Kent on the 1980s Superman show. He was Man-at-Arms on Masters of the Universe. And in the most recent Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers movie, the Disney Plus movie, he's He-Man in that. So he's still around and he's still working. And then the final cast member was Alan Melvin, who played Thun. He died in 2008. He was Electro on Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends. And he was in on those shows like Foofer, Plastic Man. He was on Archie Bunker's Place. And he was Sam the Butcher on The Brady Bunch. So, again, quite a very diverse career, kind of doing voice acting and then acting. And then, as mentioned, Lou Scheimer was the narrator of this show. But the first season of this show is absolutely terrific. It is about as close to what I can imagine Flash Gordon was in the comic strips as you could get. And the animation is really quite nice. The character designs are great. The monsters are really cool. It's a really fun show. And when you pointed it out to me, I had such a blast revisiting it, even though I hadn't seen it in so long.
Yeah. The first time I rewatched it, I must have been 7 or 8 years ago. It was on Hulu. And I'm like, oh, wow, it was real. I do remember this as vividly as I thought. I put it on, and that first season is so easy to crank your way through. It is, it doesn't talk down to you. I this predates a bit of, the sort of legal requirement for animated shows not just to be an ad for a toy.
Right.
Right. So I think when that happened, when that came in, Lou Scheimer and Filmation, a part of their thing, their I don't want to call it a shtick because I think it was very well intentioned, is they would always have a kind of moral to the story. I mean, the most obvious version of it is in the He-Man animated series and She-Ra, where they would literally come back after the thing and tell you what the moral of the story was. But they usually had something, it was sort of teachable moment inside their animated things once the 80s kicked in. But this predates that. And it's better for it because they really do just focus on telling a story, it's better for it from an adult standpoint, right? As entertainment for, I guess, as a kid, I enjoyed it. But as an adult, I don't necessarily want to, sit through a instruction on how to dial 911 in the event of a fire in the midst of my cartoon. So they start at the beginning. They tell a story, they introduce you to characters, but they'll introduce you to a character halfway through the episode, and Flash won't necessarily meet that character. But then, at the very end of the episode, it moves into a cliffhanger, and that's when Flash meets the brand new character. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And it just really keeps you, it's bingeable by today's, using today's, language. It's bingeable in a way a lot of cartoons from our childhood are not.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, right. Stuff that's done as episodic television isn't, it can get repetitive because of course it's not meant to be watched like that. You know, it's not meant to be watched 20 in a row sitting in your sweatpants on the couch. And, you know, right. You're supposed to watch it every Saturday when you're 9 and then you go outside and play. You know, that's the sum total of how it's supposed to leave an imprint on your brain. And so, yeah, it's not fair to kind of judge it by those standards of like, well, it could get a bit repetitive. Well, you know, you're not supposed to watch it like that. It's kind of like right. when movie serials now are on YouTube and they just take all 16 chapters and slap them together for like a 3.5 hour movie. And you watch it, and after, you know, I'd say about 45 minutes, you get like, all right, we've kind of done these beats. Well, yeah, but that's how it was built to do. You can't judge it by that standard. But yeah, one of the things I really do enjoyed about the first season, especially, and of course, this is natural when you've got the animation medium to play in, is that if you have a character like Thun, you know, a lion man, which they could never do. In the movie serial, certainly, and they really could kind of not even really do in the movie for the most part, because just getting an animatronic, you know, getting like a human to kind of be like a lion man just would have been budgetary too much. So there's lots of great sci-fi concepts and characters in this that you would never get to see otherwise, because the movie would cost $400 trillion.
Right.
Yeah. You know, and it's kind of like what Filmation did for Star Trek when they did Star Trek in the early in the mid 70s. It was like, okay, we can have a character with three legs, and we can have there was a lion woman on that show, to Mares. You know, the Filmation certainly liked their lion characters. But you know, they could do lots of stuff that you would never get to see because the sky's the limit. And in some ways, that to me makes this almost like the most purest distillation of the comic strip in any sort of medium. Because as much as I love the movie, and I do love the movie has its own unique take, and it's not exactly the comic strip. To me, the cartoon, this is the, especially the first season, is the comic strip.
Yeah, I mean, it's the cartoon is an earnest representation of it in motion.
Yeah.
Of the comic strip, and yeah, I 1000% agree about how good it looks. Now, I mean, there are, you know, Lou Scheimer has his bag of tricks that he goes back to often. I mentioned earlier the rotoscoping. Yeah.
I hope you enjoy that shot of Ming laughing, because you're going to see it a lot.
You're going to see it a lot. And then backgrounds that are nothing, and then just a single thing that is the thing you're supposed to focus on, but then nothing everywhere else. You know, real common. But what I like about the fact that they could literally do anything, they stuck very very in intentionally to that kind of I don't want to say simple, but that earliest idea of what a rocket ship would look like. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? What a ray gun would look like. Like, you know, but it's very much like the way I was explaining it to my wife is that it is a show written by people who say the word robot like robot, like it. You know, it's got that old timey.
That's how I say it. Yeah, well, but I'm very old timey myself. So
you're a very old timey guy. you know, so it's like it's got that throwback sensibility to it, but it's not hokey. In that regard, like, it's not like, look how, you know, goofy people were in the 1930s. Mm. It's like, we think this looks cool as hell, so we're going to do it that way.
Yeah, I said it's really fun. And a lot of cartoons, you know, don't hold up because, again, they're not really meant to. But watching it again, and there are some, you know, genuine I didn't even mean to say that because it's going to sound insulting. But there are some like real like heady writers on this show. Like you had Paul Dini wrote four episodes, Samuel Peoples,
what?
You know, the sci-fi writer who wrote a bunch of Star Trek's classic Star Trek. He did 7 episodes. I mean, there are some real heavy hitters here writing, this show. And that's, you know, that's kind of amazing. You would get like, you know, again, Samuel Peoples, man, like that's pretty cool. Get him to write these sci-fi concepts. He said it was, I love the acting wise. Like I said, I mentioned the cast. Robert Ridgely is a great Flash Gordon. He's very stoic and he doesn't change much. But again, that's a lot to ask for a children's cartoon. You know, I mean, you know, Superman was Superman always, but he is very straight ahead kind of guy. Mm-hmm. And I always feel like Alan Oppenheimer is Ming the Merciless. By the way, if you go to his IMDb page, you'll recognize the guy's face. As soon as you see him, like, oh, I've seen that guy in 40 million TV shows. I'm feeling like in some weird way, Ming has a little more characterization as much as it goes, because it's like, I think in the beginning episodes, he's very dismissive of Flash Gordon. Like, he's like, oh, who is this guy? Who is this interloper? I'm going to marry Dale. That's my thing. And then maybe I'm reading into it, but I feel like the later shows, he's regarding Flash as his nemesis, as kind of almost like his equal, as opposed to the beginning where he's like, you know, pitiful earthling. And that might just be the simple nature of writing the stories after a while. You're like, all right, Ming knows who this guy is at this point. But Thun too, I feel like Thun has like a little bit of characterization, that they are getting more familiar with this guy, and that Flash Gordon is who he is. Again, I may be reading into it just because I watched 24 of them all in a row.
I don't think you are. I mean, I think that, you know, okay, so these were jobs, right, for these guys. But, you know, they are actors. That, you know, they're voice actors. Their craft means something to them. And they breathe something into, you know, if you get a regular gig doing this, and especially with the Filmation, I mean, Bruce Schreimer had a stable of people that he went back to all the time.
Oh yeah.
If you watch any Filmation, I mean, with the exception of with the exception of this Star Trek animated series, which had the voice cast from the television series, or most of it, minus Chekhov, then you have, you hear the same voices throughout. Like, you can watch, what, like, the Mighty Isis and hear the same voices as right. You hear in you know, the very latest, the very last episodes of She-Ra, or something like that, or Fat Albert and the Cosby Kids, even. Like, you know, he had this stable of actors that he went back to, and I don't think that they were phoning it in. I mean, but they certainly were in some shows and episodes. But I don't think they were, for this project, I don't think they were phoning it in at all. And I'm intuiting this, but I feel like it must be because, you know, Flash Gordon is a touchstone for a lot of people of a certain generation, of a certain era. And I bet it meant something to them to play those characters, especially it's Alan Oppenheimer, you know, because not only was he, you know, Ming the Merciless, he was Dr. Han Zarkov.
I should have mentioned that. Yeah, he was Zarkov as well. Yeah,
who, you know, so he's playing it all over the place. So he's not just reading words; like, he's got to think about these things, you know. And I agree with your interpretation that Ming was almost amused by Flash Gordon when in the first season. You know, and it's only in the second season where he's like, you know, this guy is potentially much worse than an irritant.
Again, and his shtick, as it always is, it's in the movie serial, he wants to marry Dale. That's right. His thing, you know, he wants to marry Dale. And of course, his daughter, Princess Aura, who is ridiculously sultry. I mean, almost unbelievable that they got away
questionably
sultry. I mean, you know, you're like, wow, how did they get away with But yeah, he just wants to marry Dale and get rid of Flash. And of course, Flash keeps getting saved either by his own wits or his friends, or by Aura, who just can't quite quit him, in a way. Again, I'm just amazed that they got away with that characterization and her look. I mean, she's in like a metal bikini kind of thing. And it's just like unreal. One thing this is just a weird data point, but it stuck out to me as I was watching it. Around episode 5, Ming finally gets Dale on the altar, right? And there's a priest.
Oh, the Klansman?
He looks like a Klansman, which is, A, that's already disturbing. And then B, the guy who voiced him sounds exactly like Marvin the Martian. Mm-hmm. So it really kind of cut the drama where it's like, Ming, will you take that? I'm like, I don't know if I can take this as seriously as I'm supposed to. But I'm glad I'm not the only one who thought he looked like a Klansman. As soon as I saw it, I was like, oh, Lord.
This is like that one radio show episode of Superman where he fights the Klan.
Oh boy. So I said they did the first season And then they brought it back and they retooled it, which is always a dangerous thing. And that's, we brought on, as I mentioned, the aforementioned Gremlin, who is firmly in the tradition of the funny animal character that virtually every Saturday morning cartoon had. Mm-hmm. Orko from Masters of the Universe, yeah. Wonder Dog, or Gleek, or, you know, I mean, you know, I don't really count Scooby-Doo in that regard because he's one of the characters.
He's a central character.
Yeah, like Scrappy-Doo. It's every show does that. And so it would be hard enough to stick this character in there because, you know, it's just kind of a gimmick. But man, Gremlin really takes over the show in season two, unfortunately.
Yeah, no, there's no point in that character. I mean, but, you know, timeline, you can see, though, that kind of that thing that sort of I was talking about earlier about the moral message, like it, not just the moral message, but speaking very directly to children. Young children became required of an animated series in a way that I think prior to the 80s it hadn't been, you know, because they made a lot of, you know, legal changes in the late 70s, some of which was brought amazing things about. Schoolhouse Rock exists because mm-hmm. of changes that they made legally speaking, you know. And then I guess it was probably the 70s when they did that. But then at the same time, they kind of commodified children's brains shortly thereafter in the midst of the Reagan administration, when they made it okay to literally have half hour commercials, as long as there was some moral content involved in it, as you know.
Yeah. Gremlin is constantly, you know, doing funny things or high, you know, he's being like a scaredy cat too many episodes. By the way, they split the show up in season two into two segments per show, like two 12 minute segments. So you have two different stories per show because they feel like kids' attention spans. Somehow kids' attention spans were fine in 1979, but by 1982, not so much. And so a lot of episodes of the season two end with Gremlin doing something funny and Flashingdale going, Gremlin. Yeah, and then they cut to him going, you know, and then bang credits. And it's just, you're like, yeah, this is, you know, clearly a formula that they've got that you're just plugging now Flash Gordon into.
It's the same show sort of in name only, you know. It becomes, it's similar to like when Batmite was on the
right. Yeah, right. Another example of that. Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And it just like it. It's one of those things where, you know, when I was redoing the rewatch for this, I rewatched all of the first season minus the parts where I nodded off because it was like 2 a.m. but I watched probably maybe 3 of the shorter episodes of season two. I just it doesn't hold up to season one. It's not the way you'd want this show to go out.
I found season two to be a little more of a grind because it was like right from the first scene of Gremlin, you're like, all right, I know where this is going, and there's going to be a lot of this, mm-hmm. you know, it's going to be a lot of this footage. But I mean, again, there's still some fun stuff in it. I mean, the episodes do kind of blend together. So I'm trying to, like, as I'm looking through the titles, Sacrifice of the Volcano Men, like, remember that one being fun? They go to Volcano City, which, you know, that was like a cool designed kind of set, but world for the Flash to run into. Survival Game, which is the last episode slash with Gremlin's Finest Hour, but like Gremlin gets captured by lizard people, and I remember the designs were really cool on that.
Yeah,
speaking of designs, there was a toy line for this show. There was an action figure line, and I had them. I had Flash Gordon, I had Thun, I know I had Ming, and I would intermix them with my Star Wars figures and stuff. I really love those, that line of toys. I think they were Mattel. And I don't want to go onto eBay and look and see if I can find them, because I'm afraid I'll buy one if I see it. Because thanks to the pinball machine, I'm all in on Flash Gordon now, and I got to stop. So
you double down on the Flash Gordon memorabilia.
Yeah, it's not good. It's not good at all. And don't even get me started on the fact that there's a Mego line of Flash Gordon dolls that came out in the mid 70s, which I don't think was tied to anything in particular. I think Mego just thought, well, Flash Gordon, kids like Flash Gordon. That's like an evergreen line. And they put out 4 Flash Gordon dolls, which are really beautiful. I mean, and those are a mint if you try and find them somewhere. But again, I'm, you know, it's like, if you don't want to find stuff to buy on eBay, don't go on eBay, basically. So that's what I'm trying to do, is just not go on to eBay and type in Flash Gordon. Now, the show has a kind of unique history in that originally Filmation was commissioned to do a 90-minute full-length movie, and it was going to air in primetime on NBC. And so Filmation does this movie. It's called Flash Gordon, The Greatest Adventure of All. They really go to town on this thing. They present it to NBC. And NBC, kind of in a similar way that they did with Star Trek The Cage, they go, this is a little too good.
Mm-hmm.
We can't really do anything with this. And in fact, why don't we make this an animated series? And they ended up taking kind of some of the footage and kind of redoing it. And so, well, certainly all the character designs. And that's how it got turned into a Saturday animated series. But then the movie did air in 1982 for one night on NBC as a full-length movie, Flash Gordon, The Greatest Adventure of All. Now, bafflingly, this thing is not available, like, anywhere officially.
Yeah, I really need you to use your fire and water mojo like you did with getting MASH to finally show up.
Yeah, there you go. Right, exactly.
We need to collectively, as nerds listening to this podcast right now, we all need to will this into a DVD or a Blu-ray pressing.
Yeah. There are chunks of it available on YouTube. Somebody uploaded all 9 chapters, but then they uploaded the same chapters multiple times, so it's not the whole movie. But this is what happened. So I discovered this thanks to that Lou Scheimer book that Tumara's put out that you have. And I remember, there's the movie. Okay. So I go try and find the movie, and I watch the first 10 minutes. And I'm like, this is the greatest Flash Gordon adaptation of all time. This 10 minutes. I can't believe how good this is. I couldn't watch anymore, and I got so frustrated. So I went onto the gray market of the internet, let's say, and somebody was selling it as a download, and I bought it, and I know we have now both seen it. So what did you think of Greatest Adventure of All?
It is the exact sweet spot for me. Like my go-to comfy warm nest in terms of entertainment is non-Disney animated films, and in particular ones from the 70s, and obviously the more sci-fi the better. This was everything that I could have ever wanted out of a Flash Gordon anything. The animation, there's things in it that just absolutely blow my mind, like in terms of, you know, in this version, Ming is aligned with the Nazis, which is an interesting take. You know, no coming back from that, Ming. You're a Nazi now. The animation style is so rich and detailed. There's the scene at sort of toward the beginning where Dale and Flash are running after Zarkov to chase him, and there's like some sort of volcanic thing happening and magma and lava going everywhere. Mm-hmm. And the detail they put into that is just absolutely astonishing. The story is fantastic. I don't have a lot of experience with the Flash Gordon comic strips, which, by the way, is a thing I'm going to fix. I need to go back and read all that. But, you know, there's a lot of this version of Flash, and, you know, as a result, the TV series, there's a lot of sort of John Carter of Mars in there, which I do have a lot of experience with. There's a lot of that kind of, it reminds me of an animated version of those early mid 70s movies, like The Land That Time Forgot, The People That Time Forgot, you know, those.
Yeah, sure.
Those
at Earth's core, you know, yeah.
Or yeah, you know, anything with Peter Cushing in it. You know, it's got that feel to it, just that non-stop adventure. Like, okay, well, woof, we escaped the weird dinosaur dragon things. Well, now we're being attacked by ape men. Right. You know, and as they progress through the course of the film, their clothing gets destroyed more.
Yes, you know, yes. Flash gets more and more nude as the movie goes on.
And I guess that is, you know, that is what explains why, not just Princess Ara, but, you know, literally every female that Flash encounters in the course of the first season of the animated series is just instantly horny for him. That's really
yeah, everybody, every woman is like, oh, the Earthling. Yep, okay.
He is the animated embodiment of men want to be him and women want to be with him, like, instantly. And of course, Dale, no exception. She falls in love with him immediately. She's known for 10 minutes and then she gets jealous of Ara 20 minutes later when she first meets her. So, you know, it's and everyone also takes a shine to Dale as well. So it's like, I don't know what's going on Mongo, but they're not getting it enough that these two newbies show up and they just immediately need to, you know, need to get all Barbarella with it. But
or Flesh Gordon, as the case may be.
Yeah, I thought we weren't going to bring that one up. But, I loved Dr. Zarkov, especially in the animated movie. He's very interesting. He's kind of a jerk sort of throughout, but becomes reliable. And you know, at the end of spoiler, at the end of the film, Flash basically has to, you know, do some laser gun shenanigans to make it so that Earth isn't destroyed, but in so doing he traps them on Mongo forever. Mm-hmm. And Dr. Zarkov is like, are you sure? he's like, are you sure you want to do that? I'm like, yeah, you know, that's really not a question you need to be asking right now, Dr. Zarkov. But I also like that he's pudgy, one of the rare animated pudgy heroes that isn't Fat Albert. I thought that was always a nice touch. But I will say, what the movie or I would say what the animated series gains over the movie is the voice acting.
Hmm.
I think the voice actors in Flash Gordon, The Greatest Adventure of All, are a little less pantomime, a little more serious. The stuff is delivered a little bit more earnestly and a little bit more realistically, but you cannot beat Oppenheimer as Ming the Merciless.
Yeah, he's great.
Right, like, it's just, that's who he is. I mean, even Max von Sydow couldn't outdo Oppenheimer as Ming the Merciless. You know what I mean? Like, it just, like, you know, so the fact that I forget, you probably know, but I forget who the voice actor is for Ming, but he is spectacular in the role.
Yeah, the one big voice difference I noticed was Ted Cassidy, the great Ted Cassidy, Lurch, is Thun in the movie. And this that ended up being the last thing he ever did. He passed away, and then they had to recast it for the show. One of the things about the movie that's so amazing is the animation is much smoother than anything you would see on Saturday morning. Beautiful. Because they just couldn't do it. They couldn't do that level of in-betweens where you're getting, you know, this many drawings in between any given frame and stuff. But the opening sequence, like when Flash tries to rescue a friend who's been bombed by the Nazis,
mm-hmm.
and the guy dies, and you're like, this is really got some stakes to it. And I wasn't expecting that for a Filmation cartoon.
Oh, I'm really glad you brought that up. That opening sequence with the Luftwaffe, the animation of that with them blitzing the Warsaw, I think. Absolutely stunning. Like, just beautiful.
Yeah, we should say it's set in World War II. Oh, by the way, the actor who plays Ming in the movie is Vic Perrin. Who did a lot of voiceovers, and I think he was in like a Twilight Zone. Yeah, most of the cast is, well, that's like half the cast is different. You've got Bob Holt with Zarkov, Ted Cassidy was done, but then Robert Ridgely is Flash, and Diane Pershing is Dale, and Melinda Britt is Ara. You mentioned again, like, the sexual content, like, there's a belly dancing scene in this movie that I'm like, this could pass for heavy metal in terms of its look and how much they are getting into the undulating of the women. And I have to wonder, what did audiences in 1982 think they were watching when they saw this? Because you're still thinking of cartoons as for kids. Yeah. And here's this thing where Aura, you mentioned, like, all the women are like, I got to get with this guy. I mean, Hitler makes an appearance in this movie. Yeah. Hitler! And there's swastikas. I mean, good luck. Nowadays, some people would like that. But back then, that was considered a bad thing. And it's like, it's un, like, there's actually animated Adolf Hitler in this movie. Yep. It's crazy.
They animated Adolf Hitler. And immediately when I'm watching that, of course, I think, like, immediately of Wizards, right? Ralph Bakshi's Wizards. Mm. Because
I've never seen that.
Really?
No, I've never seen that.
Huh.
I've just never seen it.
I do not often encounter movies that I have seen and you have not. We will watch it together.
Okay.
It is, you know, again, that's my sweet spot. Ralph Bakshi in particular.
Right.
Ralph Bakshi and anything, you know, Lou Scheimer touches in terms of animation for me. But that sequence with Hitler just immediately made me think of, and that sequence with the Luftwaffe made me think of the, I guess, perhaps unsurprisingly larger budgeted animated feature film, right?
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't better, though. Like the animated feature film was not better in terms of the animation of those two sequences than the Filmation animation was. Mm. Like they nailed it. They hit it out of the park. If they were rotoscoping that Luftwaffe scene, then they did it seamlessly. Like you couldn't, usually you can tell, you can read that from a mile away, but that looked like all just pen and paper. Really, really beautiful stuff.
Yeah. It is unbelievable that it is unavailable in any official format that you would, I can't understand. I mean, maybe they're a little dicey about that Hitler is in it. And that, you know what I mean? Maybe they're just like, I don't know. Do we want to sell this to kids? You know, like, but still, I think, you know, it's set in the '40s when Flash Gordon was kind of in his, you know, sort of his heyday. So it's understandable. Maybe that gives them a little bit of pause, but it's full length. It's 90 minutes. I mean, I'm sure Prince Baron is in it as well. Yep. I mean, all Volton is in it, all the characters, you know. It is really startlingly beautiful. And like I said, when I saw that first 10 minutes, I was like, I've got to see the rest of this. Mm-hmm. I've got to, I got to find this. And like I said, there are some gray marketplaces where you can get it. I've never thought to look for it at conventions because I wasn't really aware of its existence. And
I'm going to now though.
Right. Exactly. I'm going to go to the Monster Mania Con in a couple of weeks. I'm like, I'm going to go to the DVD guys and look for that because this thing is just so beautiful and really probably the most direct adaptation of, by the way, the movie was written by Sam Peoples.
Yes.
As well. So, I mean, it's really a beautiful thing. And so anybody, if you can find it, it is absolutely worth it. Even if you're just a fan of, as you talk about, Corey, just like space fantasy, it's just a solid movie. I mean, mm-hmm. just a solid, you know, could they have released it in the theaters? Maybe. I think the animation is probably up to that level. It's really smooth.
Well, and the Wizards was released in the theaters, and I mean, I would say frame for frame, the animation in this is better in a lot of instances than the animation in Wizards, and I love Ralph Bakshi, so it hurts me to say that. But.
Yeah, I mean, the backgrounds are beautiful. Like I said, it is amazing, and I'm just flummoxed that it is so unavailable. It's just gone down the rabbit hole. Now, on the other end of the spectrum, in terms of animation, we do need to mention, this is again something else I learned while I was doing my Flash Gordon deep dive, was that this movie / the cartoon was not his first appearance in animation. He appeared, and it mentions this on Wikipedia, a movie from 1972, an animated movie called Popeye Meets the Man Who Hated Laughter. And I was like, the what? Who what? Like, what? What the hell is that? And I looked it up, and it was a movie that aired again on television, like a full-length movie. And it is, the shorthand is, it's basically Crisis on Infinite King feature syndicate characters. It is a movie about a guy who hates to laugh, and he wants to get rid of all laughter in the world. Of course, that's something Popeye doesn't like. And it is a team-up of all of the King Features characters, Flash Gordon, Mandrake, the Phantom, Popeye, Beetle Bailey, Blondie, you know, like every
that
King
jet pilot.
Yeah. I mean, every King features character in the style that they appear in the comic strips. Mm-hmm. So imagine all those characters trying to be smooshed together. The styles there are all in one movie, and Flash Gordon is in it in this incredibly dull gray jumpsuit, which does nothing for him. I know the red uniform is like, that's the uniform. Yeah. It's not good. It's not a good, no. The animation is cheap to the point of almost Dadaism. There's some points where it almost feels like just pencil drawings that they just put on the screen. But for the sheer oddness of it, of trying to merge the worlds of these characters, it's fun as hell to watch because you're like, when, what? Like, why did they, who thought this was a good idea? Like, you know, but it exists and it's on YouTube. You can watch the whole thing.
Yeah, it's like this, it watches very much like you're reading daily strips, right? Because every time they bring in a character or a new character interacts with an existing character, there's a bit, there's a gag, there's, yep. You know, Dagwood getting a sandwich, there's, you know, there's the children getting, you know, from, was it Family Circus? I want to say, like,
is it Family Circus? I forget. I forget.
Some random cherubic, you know, yeah. Comic strip children.
I think High and Lois are in this.
High and Lois. That's, yeah, High and Lois. High and Lois.
High and Lois.
Are in this. And it reads, it watches very much like you're just watching, you know, animated versions of the comic strips loosely connected by this overarching, you know, villain who's awful. Visually speaking, it looks like, I don't mean awful in the fact that, you know, he's good at being a villain. I just mean he's not good. It's not good. but the animation reminds me of, and I need you to help me on the name of the series because it's escaping me right now. But it had a Diaper Man, Cuckoo Man.
Oh, the Mighty Heroes. In fact, that was the last thing we covered on the last episode of Saturday Morning Fever.
Wow.
Mighty Heroes.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
You weren't kidding when you said it happens once a year because I listened to that episode.
Yeah. Yeah. That was like January of last year. So, yeah. Yep.
The animation style is like a downgraded version of that.
Yes.
And then my understanding is that this series was, or this movie, they call it a movie. It's not. It's a 40-minute.
Yeah, right. I should say it's not a full length. Right. It's not a movie.
It's kind of like the precursor on ABC to the ABC weekend movie that they started showing. The ABC weekend special, I think, is what it was called when we were kids. It's a precursor to that where they had like 40-minute plus commercials, hour-long things that were not regular cartoons or everyday things that they played on Saturday mornings. When I was reading about it, I learned about that for the first time, and I didn't know that existed either. But yeah, I mean, you know, there are Flash Gordon is the least flashiest Flash ever. Steve Cannon is in it, who, you know, is, it just sort of reminds me of a tube of toothpaste. Like the King features and characters, every single one of them, I swear, but you know, even the air quotes serious characters like the Phantom and Mandrake and Lothar.
Prince Valiant is in this thing.
Prince Valiant, yeah, Prince Valiant has a cameo. Like, you know, even those characters are kind of doing silly things, so it sort of ties it all together.
Yes, I would agree with that. The characters do not, they do kind of keep the adventure characters kind of together, you know, separate from the comedy characters, but then again, they do kind of overlap. By the way, I should say the guy that played Flash Gordon in this movie is Bob McFadden, a voice actor. He was Cool McCool. He was on Thunder. He snarf on the Thundercats. So, I mean, you know, and if you look on his IMDb, Milton the Monster, he had a million voice credits. But yeah, it is a truly surreal watch because you're just like, what an idea to, and you think about how they barely did that on like Marvel and DC cartoons. You know, I mean, they did like that one brief run of Justice League. They did like six shows and that was it. But you're like, wow, this is really kind of interesting to take all of these characters. I mean, like, you know, Barney Google is in this. Yeah. It's like, was Barney Google still in papers in 1972? I mean, my God.
Yeah, it was crazy. I the whole time I was just like, what am I watching? Like, how does this exist? And what, I mean, is that what Flash Gordon looked like in, what was this, 1972, right?
72, yeah.
Yeah. So is that what Flash Gordon looked like in the comic strips in 1972? Or could they just not be, you know, could they not be bothered to design a costume for him that was, like, reasonable?
Yeah, you know, he looks like he's wearing that that apron they put on you when you get x-rays at the dentist, that big heavy gray thing. It's what it looks like.
Yeah.
God, you're really not doing him a service here making him look so dull.
But I kept mistaking him for Steve Cannon. I'm getting that name right?
Steve Canyon.
Yeah. Canyon. That's
Canyon,
was,
yeah, not Cannon. Yeah, yeah, because they're both, you know, stoic blonde guys. So, right. You know, yeah, that's what it is. But yeah, it's a truly surreal kind of watch. So yeah, you can watch it on YouTube, and as you said, it's only 40 minutes, although it seems kind of a lot longer. Watched it, but I mean, but that I learned all this from just, you know, learning about the Flash Gordon, rewatching the Filmation show. I was like, oh, I just went down and learned all like this and this and this and this. Now I have not watched Defenders of the Earth. I've never seen that show,
Rob.
I'll tell you, because it came along at an age where I was kind of not watching cartoons anymore. I was still watching the only cartoon show, and I've mentioned this on other episodes of other shows, it was Super Friends. I watched Super Friends up until the end, even though I was like 16 or 15, even though I was like, I'm a little old for this, but it was still the Super Friends.
Right.
But everything else, I was like, I'm too old for this. So Defenders of the Earth was just out of my wheelhouse by that point. But I would like to see it because I am kind of curious, especially now you mentioned King's Watch. I am kind of curious as to what the take on Flash Gordon is on that show.
It's very different. You know, the voice acting on that show is really, really good. The theme song is banging. It's a banger. It slaps, as the kids would say. it's great. It puts me like right in that mode. But yeah, I totally get why you didn't, because as I say, it was on the very, very end of my sort of interest in watching animated things. And in that regard, like daily cartoon shows, I switched over to like watching like anime and that's really when I kicked into watching things like, you know, Ralph Bakshi movies crazy European, like French animated science fiction and stuff like that. But yeah, so I can get that. And you're, I think maybe a year older than me. So
I think I'm a couple years older. Yeah. So yeah. I would have been like, no. Plus I got to say Mandrake never done much for me. I mean, well, I have to say, I was like,
he's very cool in Defenders of the Earth. He's very cool in The King's Watch. You know, it's a fun character. There is, of course, the problematic element of the fact that Lothar, is a black man that hangs out with him and gets him out of jams quite often. In the 80s, they kind of come in at it from he's very much his own character.
Right.
And the only thing about the Defenders of the Earth that I struggled with is that there is a funny animal.
Is there really? Yeah,
there
oh,
is.
No.
Yeah, there's a Gleek. And the point of Defenders of the Earth was to pass the mantle of these King Features Syndicate characters onto their children. So
it's a
split cast of kids, and the kids really kind of lack any kind of characterization, and they're not terribly interesting, but they're usually why the Defenders of the Earth have to get involved in something, because there's
they get into trouble,
yeah, you know, that kind of thing. But no, it's a good series. It's fun. I rewatch it maybe every couple of years. There's not a lot. It's got very different. Mongo is I think it's like an ice planet. You know, they don't ever really get into like the Lion Men or Voltan or anything like
that. Oh, I see. Okay. It doesn't. Okay. They got into, they did 67 episodes. That's a, a pretty solid run for a cartoon show.
I guess that is a lot, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And they usually don't do that many. So, okay. All right. Well, maybe we'll do a Saturday Morning Fever on that show at some point. I'll be experiencing it for the first time. But yeah, I mean, it was really fun going back and watching these shows that I hadn't seen in forever. Again, it brought back memories of playing with the toys, which was really fun. Because as I mentioned, that toy line is really, really fun and good, and it had a lot of cool, you know, just the visual, they look like the cartoon characters. I remember the cards were really good. So, and again, as I mentioned, it's on available, it's on Freevee and Tubi, which is free for everybody.
Yeah,
you got to sit through ads, but they're all available. And it is really, if you're a Flash Gordon fan like I have now become, it's really, really quite charming. And as I mentioned, if you can find the movie, give the movie a shot, because the movie is, you will not be disappointed. That is a really, really rewarding. So, I think that's going to do it for Flash Gordon for this episode of Saturday Morning Fever. Corey, anything else we want to say about Flash Gordon, the show, or anything else before we wrap up?
I think that we would be sort of remiss if we didn't, point out that Flash Gordon is kind of an Ouroboros kind of thing in terms of pop culture, because, you know, Flash Gordon inspired Star Wars, of course, very, very obviously inspired Star Wars, among other influences. But Star Wars is why we got a Flash Gordon animated series, right? Because everybody wanted in on that sweet, sweet Star Wars money, right? That's that amazing, you know, sci-fantasy thing that kids were really into. So they were just throwing everything at the wall to see what sticks. And, you know, that's, so we, you know, it kind of like is self-reinforcing. It's a snake biting its own tail. So, you know, maybe that means with all of the renewed interest and growth in Star Wars for a new generation, maybe we'll see, you know, some new Flash Gordon in the not too distant future.
Supposedly Taika Waititi is attached to it. Now, I mean, I like Taika Waititi a lot, but he can't do everything.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Like, he can't do every property. So I'd be happy if it got moved over to somebody else with another take on it. Or, by the way, I should mention the connection to Star Wars and Flash Gordon is even more of the snake biting its own tail, because the whole reason we even have Star Wars is because George Lucas couldn't get the rights to make a Flash Gordon movie.
Flash Gordon movie, right. Exactly.
He tried to get it from King Features, and they said, get out of here, kid. What the hell do you know? And he's like, fine, I'll just write my own thing. And then there you go. So, I mean, it's like one thing inspires another, which then in turn inspires another thing. So it's, the connection is deep with all those concepts and stuff. But yes, I hope, you know, the movie is 42 years old at this point.
Yep.
There's no reason why you can't try it again. Give it a fresh coat of paint, see what you can do with it. So,
they tried hopefully. It in the mid O's and it wasn't good.
The sci-fi TV show, which I've never seen.
They just utterly ignored everything about Flash Gordon that is fun.
Okay.
I mean, there wasn't a single lion man in that show that said, you don't know, you haven't loved until you've loved a lion woman all covered in fur, which the fact that I now know, I didn't know this before, but the fact that I now know that that is Ted Cassidy in like his final role talking about being a furry is like, what? I'm like, my world is rocked right now.
Ted probably enjoyed doing that line. He's like,
he did.
Yeah, yep. We're really getting something past the kids here. everybody, check out Flash Gordon. Find the movie if you can. It's a load of fun. And let us know in the comments what you thought of the show or the toy line, anything related to that. Again, we did the Treasury cast on Flash Gordon, but now there's even more Flash Gordon. And who knows, maybe we'll even do something with the movie at some point over on Film and Water. But Corey, thank you as always. You know, it's always fun to record with you. So thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you. I've been looking forward to being on this particular podcast for quite a while.
Right. And we do have plans to do other ones. You have talked about other shows that we want to get to, not so much Defenders of the Earth, because that's a whole other thing. But there's other shows that we've talked about doing a Saturday Morning Fever on, and we'll probably get to those maybe next year, considering the rate that we put these out. Of course, you can follow this network, the Fine Water Network, over on Twitter at FW Podcasts. And if you want to support the Fine Water Network, go to patreon.com/FW podcast. There you can unlock various rewards, one of which is your name checked on a show of your choice. So big thanks to David S. Gutierrez and Gord Tolton for their support of the network. We very much appreciate it. So that's going to do it. Thanks, everybody, for listening. I would say at this point, put down the TV remote and go outside, everybody. We will see you later. Bye.
Blasting off on a desperate mission to save Earth from the evil plottings of the tyrannical space lord Ming the Merciless. Dr. Hans Zarkov and Dale Arden have joined me, Flash Gordon, on a fantastic journey into worlds where peril and adventure await us. Whee!